Well, good Tuesday afternoon, everyone. I'm Pam Stack, your host, and you're listening to Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. This afternoon, I am honored and delighted beyond words to have with me New York Times bestselling author Mary Alice Monroe, who I always considered a fabulous Southern fiction writer. Her stories are very unique from the Lowcountry, but she considers herself an environmental writer, which I think is fascinating. I can't wait to talk to Mary Alice Monroe. So I'm going to open up the studio doors and welcome Mary Alice. How are you this fine day?
Hi, Pam. I'm very good. Thank you. It's very steamy here in South Carolina.
I'm in Southwest Florida. I get it. You know, I get it. It was 98 when I was out this morning at 11 o'clock. So I understand that.
At 11 o'clock.
It's crazy, isn't it? But you know Southwest Florida well yourself. So,
oh, very well. I have lots of family there.
I think it's fabulous, and we were speaking in the green room before the show started, and you're going to be down here the first week in March, and I'm so excited because your mom lives so close to me, 15 minutes away, and your sister is probably 30 minutes from me, so we should have a good time when you come.
I'm excited to come. I am looking forward to be at the Sanibel Library on March 6th.
Yes, and it's wonderful out there. You're coming right at the high season, and they are voracious readers out on that small island. There are a lot of indie bookstores out there that I adore. So
yes.
You and I will talk more about that. Welcome to the show. I'm very excited to have you here. I love your books. They are so sweet and so gentle and so loving and so perfect.
Thank you. I
love the fact that there's something very special about storytelling from the Lowcountry. It's very unique to its geography and its environment. Do you agree, or is that just an assumption I'm making?
No, I do feel there's a richness in storytelling here in the Southeast, especially in the Lowcountry. I feel it's the environment encourages it. The whole idea of storytelling at the dinner table, on the front porch or the back porch, at casual times, I think it's always a strong part of our cultural heritage. So it's only natural that authors would draw on that for their books. And, you know, Charleston in particular has a deep, deep history of great authors. And the Poetry Society of America was founded here. So it's a proud tradition.
I want to say that I was very fortunate to speak to Cassandra King, who is Pat Conroy's widow. And she said the same thing. She said that the land, the culture, the environment affects everything that she writes, and it also affected her husband's writing. And of course, when I think of Southern literature, I think of you and Pat Conroy and Cassandra and writers. Yeah, so beautiful.
Pat,
the work is stunning.
I think Pat and I definitely shared a real passion for the landscape. And
yes,
we both served he was on the first board of the South Carolina Aquarium, and I still am on the board. And it always inspires our writing. There's no question about it. We've talked about it in the past. And I miss him terribly, by the way. We all do.
Yeah.
He left a real hole in Southern literature. But he'll go, work lives on. His work
lives
on.
Yes, it does. It's true. I agree with you. I still go back and read his work, especially The Prince of Tides. I can almost recite the dialogue. So, you know, for me, that's a best thing. I want to talk about you and your history, because you have been so highly awarded, and there is so much acclaim and so many accolades for your work. You know, I know that you've achieved many things, including the New York Times and USA Today bestseller list. You've received numerous awards, including Reader's Choice, the South Carolina Festival Award for Excellence, the Southwest Florida Book Festival, which I adore, RTE Lifetime Achievement. You've not been writing all your life, have you? I'm trying to count the number of books you have now. Is 12 or 13, 14?
No,
I can't
like
remember.
20. I think this book
God.
Including my children's book. You know, I don't think a lot of people realize that I've written picture books for children. 21. I'm now officially legal.
Oh my God.
I'm a legal author.
My
21.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Tell me your story, please. In
tell
terms
me
of being
about
a writer.
Becoming
a,
yeah.
Yeah.
I was
how
one
this
of
all
those.
Happened.
Well, I always knew I wanted to be a writer. You know, I always say that there are two kinds of writers, those who come upon it late in life and those who always knew, and I always knew. And I don't think one is better than the other, but for me, I knew I wanted to write before I knew it was a job. My third grade teacher, and I even remember her name. It was such a momentous day. Mrs. Crawford in third grade said, Mary Alice, did you ever think about being a writer when you grew up? And my eyes widened, and I was in shock because she could name what it was I always wanted to do. I didn't know that was a job, but I was 8 years old and telling stories. So ever since that point, I knew I could say, I want to be a writer when I grew up. And, you know, here I am.
It's interesting to me that so many writers nowadays, when I speak to them and I ask them what was the defining moment for them that they knew what they wanted to do. I just was speaking to Jeff Abbott last night, who writes the most spectacular thrillers. And he said in second grade that's what happened to him. I spoke to someone last week who said the same thing. I don't remember my teachers' names, and maybe it's because I went to Catholics taught by the nuns. But I do
remember.
well, I do remember, however, having a joy for reading, because we did not use public school textbooks. We were given other books to read, well beyond our
yes
years.
Yes, I was too.
You know,
yeah,
and, yeah. It's wonderful, and my mother was a reader. It's funny, my father was not. He liked to read the newspaper and play crossword puzzles, and, you know, he was a news junkie. I have one brother who adores reading, another one who's never picked up a book for pleasure, which doesn't – it's incomprehensible to me when a book takes you everywhere in the world. When I read your Beach House series, I feel like I'm there. I feel like I'm right there on the sand. I can imagine this kind of wobbly picket fence, you know, bordering a cottage and everything. Yeah, it might sound silly, but it's exactly how I picture. I want to talk to you about the Beach House series, too. Go ahead. Go ahead, comment.
I was just going to say, I think what makes it's sort of a hallmark of my work is that when I write about a landscape, not only do I live there, but with the animals in particular, I do the volunteering. So I'm working with the animals, and I'm out there digging the sand with the turtle eggs, or I'm rehabilitating the dolphins. You know, I know what I'm writing about because I've experienced it. And I do feel strongly that my experiences are what heighten the setting in my books and the dialogue and the characterizations. It's because I've done it. It's not something I read about or saw in a movie.
Right. No, I think that it does. And I beg your pardon. I know that, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, write what you know. And I always interpret that in different ways, but you truly are writing what you know. You are right there. You're in the sand.
Yeah.
You're in the water. You are in an area of the southeast that is considered a lovely escape. You have a very particular geographical culture with food
yes.
and everything else. So it's lovely, and it comes through in your stories. So
thank you.
Let's talk
I worked very
about,
hard at that. Thank you.
You know, and it comes through. It feels it's on a cellular level that when I read your books that I feel it. I am
like
immediately
that.
Transported there. Yeah, I'm transported
that's
there
nice.
Immediately. And to me, that's the sign of someone who is a terrific writer.
I understand
that your book, The Beach House, will be adapted into a movie for Hallmark.
That's what I understand.
And that tentatively, Andy McDowell is going to star. And I have
yes.
to tell you, when I was reading that, I thought, she's perfect. She's perfect.
Yeah. Well, it's a funny story connected with that. When I wrote The Beach House, the first one, it's a series. The Beach House came
yes.
out in 2002, so it's quite a while ago. And when I wrote it, I had Andy McDowell's picture up on my bulletin board because often I have a picture board of people, sometimes stars, sometimes just photographs I find in magazines. And I put them up so I can see clearly in my mind's eye the character. And she was Kara in my mind for
wow.
The Beach House. So fast forward,
wow.
oh gosh, 10 years, 12 years. And when I met Andy in an airplane, she was coming to Charleston, and we were both on the red eye from Atlanta, that little puddle jumper. And it was,
yes.
you know, quite late, kitty corner from each other. And I didn't say a word because I didn't want to invade her privacy. But I am passing out in my seat because I'm so excited to see her. You know, it's like she was the woman I had written Kara for, because by now I had already written Beach House Memories and Swimming Lessons. So and she has always been my heroine. So I wasn't going to say anything. I was in my mind to leave her alone. And I went out, and you know when you wait for your luggage to come out in that little extender?
Yeah.
She came
yeah.
to stand next to me, and I thought, this has to be a sign from God. So I said
absolutely.
To her, excuse me, Andy, but I just have to tell you, I really want to thank you. You were an inspiration for a character in my book. And she could have just rolled her eyes and been very, you know, snippy, but she was so genuine. And she said, why, thank you very much. Well, I'm flattered. What book was that? And I said, The Beach House. She goes, I'm going to write that down. And she did. And so my luggage came. She wished each other goodbye, and off I go. And she called me up a while later and said, I read the book and I fell in love with it. I want to produce it. So I thought that's the serendipity at its best. It was meant to happen. So we're
absolutely.
Waiting for Hallmark to declare the time. Originally, it was supposed to be out last year and then this June. And what I heard was they reinstated Hallmark Hall of Fame, and they wanted to have the Beach House for Mother's Day in 2018. But until, you know, it's a very, filming is not what I do. I write books. So Andy McDowell
right.
still is slated to produce it, and it's all set. But until it actually begins filming, I hate to give a definite date, but that's what it's slated for.
Well, I love the story. It's a great story because of just the way the pieces fell into place. You know, life is funny like that. It really
it
is. Life is so funny like that. When you least expect it, you know, you get a call
and it changes everything.
Yes. When I met Cassandra and Susan down here at Book Festival, and of course that's how I found you. I thought, isn't that interesting? I've been reading your books for so long, and I love them. So, you know, things happen for a reason. I really believe that. I really do.
I do, too.
I
do, too.
I want to go back to one of your earlier books. It's called Time is a River. It is one of your standalone
yes.
books. Oh, it's exceptional.
Yeah.
Interesting, speaking about Pat Conroy earlier, he quotes for you, this book, every book that Mary Alice Munro has written has felt like a homecoming to me. What a glorious thing for someone to say.
Yes.
Would you mind telling listeners a little bit about this?
The book? You mean The Time is a River?
Yes, yes.
It's an important book for me because I moved away from the beach location, which, I always love because I live on a beach and I'm very involved in marine animals, but I do like to expand into other areas. And I was connected to a group of women who did fly fishing. And there's always a reason for me to write a book. I just don't come up with a story and then do research. I always have the inspiration and then I do the research and that creates the story. That's just the way I always write. So they were the damsel fly fishing women, and I just loved the name. And I joined the group, and we used to go fishing up in North Carolina by Asheville. And we got involved while we were there with our guide who ran Casting for Recovery. I had never heard of this organization, and it's a group that helps survivors of breast cancer, whether it's 5 days, 5 years, or 50 years, they bring the survivors to a retreat up, and there is a camp for casting recovery in almost all 50 states of the Union. But we do fundraising all year so we can bring for free a group of women, maybe 8 to 10 women, and we teach them fly fishing. And that weekend, it's the metaphor of finding life again after cancer. It's not about cancer. It's about afterwards, surviving, finding joy again. And that was what I needed to write this book. And it inspired a novel about a woman who was a breast cancer survivor who finished Casting for Recovery and goes up into the mountains and sort of heals. She sees life at the end of this tenuous, thin line with that fish.
Yes.
And that's why it's catch and release. It's life continues. And she falls in love and she finds the mystery of a story of a great fly fishing woman from the turn of the century. And that's unusual for me to have a kind of a digging in the past and a little bit of a mystery in that. But throughout the story, it's about finding your strengths, finding the will to live, and the joy of life. And it was a really powerful book for me to write. I really, it's one of my favorites.
I love that book. I really do. I
think
it's spectacular. And so congratulations on that. You know, I think I was drawn to that book because of the title. And I'm sure you know, after your many years of writing and your success at it, that titles are very important for books. So your standalones, for example, The Four Seasons or The Long Road Home, Last Light Over Carolina, Girl in the Mirror, you know, I love these titles. Where do they come from? How do you choose titles for your books?
It's interesting. All the
you're giggling about this, you know, because
there must be
some story behind it.
Well, when I write the book, I always have what I call my working title. And honestly, for all the books you just mentioned, those were all my titles. They came out of the story. And you wake up with it or it just hits you while you're taking a walk on the beach. But the one title of the most successful series, which is the Beach House series, has, oh my goodness, that is a funny story because I wrote the Beach House, as I said, in 2002. And it came out, you know, it was a very, no one expected it to be the hit it was. It was my first New York Times hit. And it was a very simple, small, mass market book. And I knew I had written something very different. This book not only changed my life, but my career. It was when I decided I would make a difference with my novels, that I wanted my novels to be a force for good. And that's when I started writing against an endangered species. So that was the very first one, set against sea turtles. And I put it out, and it was my first hit. Well, a few months later, maybe not even 2 months later, James Patterson comes out with a book called The Beach House. And it was a big mystery. And then a few years later, another woman came out with a title called The Beach House. And a few years after that, another author came out with a book, a few years. So there's a number of beach houses. And I have now created a series, you know, continuing the same family. Whenever I have something more I want to say about sea turtles, I write another beach house book. So it's a series of books that's been 20 years in the making. But I'm really looking at these people going, don't you know I've been writing this for 20 years? And you think they would know, or they would not use the same title. But most readers don't realize there is no copyright on titles.
On titles, yes. I am aware of that. And it's interesting.
Tomorrow.
Yes, you could. You absolutely could. And here's the funny thing. A lot of time, I get, you know, hundreds of emails a day from publicists all over and authors and all. And they'll say, are you familiar with this book? And they'll give me the title, and I'll just say, you've got to give me an author and a publisher. It's too difficult to try to figure that out. But speaking of The Beach House, I want to open up our phone lines for Mary Alice. The number is 347-633-9609. If you call and say hello or have a comment or want to ask about one of her books, I'm going to gift you with the Kindle version of The Beach House right now. So 347-633-9609. And then the second caller, I have something special for you too. So you just call in and say hi to Mary Alice Munro. You've just redone the cover on The Beach House, have you not?
Yes. Yeah, it's quite pretty.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
There is an actual beach house. There is an actual house that I wrote about. And it's on Isle of Palm.
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. Your covers are lovely, and they have a feel to them that lets me know that it is some Southern literature. Do you use only one cover designer, or do you use multiple, or does your publisher handle it?
My publisher handles it. I often give them a photograph or a sketch or something that I really love. For example, with Swimming Lessons, which is the third, I fell in love with a painting. And they hired the artist to paint the cover for Swimming Lessons. And I just love it to death. And I have the painting. It's just wonderful.
But most of the time
they come up with a concept. And I have to say, of all my covers, though, I think this cover for Beach House for Rent is my absolute favorite. And it's in the same line of A Low Country Christmas, that dark blue with a simple cover. I just love it. It stands out.
So let's talk about this new book, because Beach House for Rent is number 4 in the Beach House series, and it's it just released in June. You've already, you know, are getting 5-star accolades everywhere, of course. That doesn't
surprise me.
Let's talk about this book a little bit. Beach House for Rent. Tell listeners.
It's a standalone book, and the reason I can say that, even though it's part of a series, the story takes place 10 years after, for the character, 10 years after the first book. So it's a whole another situation. Kara, the young heroine in the beach house, came back home to her mother when she was 40 years old, and the whole story was a mother-daughter reconciliation novel. And it's a great story for mothers and daughters, which is why it's being filmed for Mother's Day for Hallmark. So Beach House for Rent, all these years later, is when Kara turns 50 and she's in Isle of Palms and she still owns the beach house, her mother's house, and she's faced with a whole nother set of questions. I think at 50, women are starting to fear they're getting old. It's the first time they really choke up about it.
Yes.
And Kara's wondering, what am I doing? I gave up my career
you know, to live here with my husband and run his tour boat business, but it wasn't my passion. Where's my passion? And her husband, Brett, says, Tara, you're not old. You're 50. I'm 50. That's not old. You have 25, 30 more years left. You have a lifetime left. And this sort of took the breath away from Tara, and she realized that's a whole, the glass not half empty, glass half full. I have a whole another chapter. And the question now was, what do I want to do? Passion can I find in myself to make those next 25, 30 years meaningful? And that's her challenge in the book. And I think
it's
a lot
so,
of us find that to be true.
It is absolutely true. I have to tell you that 50 was difficult. 40 was great. I would have stayed 40 forever. But 40
was
great. Yeah, 40 was fantastic because, you know, you have
like
a kind
40.
Of, I don't give a damn what anyone says, you know, kind of thing. You come into your own. You've put up with
exactly.
everybody's crap, and it's like, I'm not, you know, I'm just doing my own thing from now on. I've got, you know, a couple, I've been around the block a couple
too.
Times. Yeah, there you go, right? There you go, and you're feeling good. You're still out there shaking it on the dance floor, doing whatever you want to
mm-hmm.
do. So, but it is true that there is, I think, for a lot of us, an abrupt change in direction. It certainly happened with me and broadcasting,
mm-hmm.
Becoming
mm-hmm.
a talk show host. You know, I was the first show in this network. There have been many, many, many who've been here for seasons, and, you know, they keep changing. I've been here since the beginning, and it's not what I started off being. I'm actually a geriatric rehab specialist, so.
Oh, my
know,
word.
Has nothing whatsoever.
Yeah.
I had my own business and everything for many, many years, but, yeah, so, and I loved what I did, don't get me wrong, but there comes a point when you say, I want to do something that's fun, for just me,
mm-hmm.
that I'm just going to have a great
that
time doing
you're
it.
You're passionate about. Yeah.
Yes. And
absolutely.
I've always been a reader, Mary Alice. So this book resonates with me on so many levels because, you know, as women, we find ourselves in so many different roles, that of caretaker, of daughter, of mother, of,
yes.
you know, support system, of sister, of aunt, of maybe grandma. You know, and working
mm-hmm.
as an assistant to somebody else and generally a spouse, it's really nice to get out there to discover yourself and what you're all about. And this book certainly hits the nail on
yeah.
the head. It's perfect.
It's what for me, that was Kara, who's hitting 50. Then because it was, you know, a novel and a new novel and a series, I wanted to do something fresh. So that my readers would make it a standalone on its own. So I introduced a new character for this book. And that was a young woman, Heather, who's 26 years old.
Yeah.
And she's coming from Charlotte. And she's renting the beach house because Tara needs the money, puts the house up for rent. And I created a somewhat autobiographical character in this respect. Not that her story is mine, but she's a shut-in. And I worked so hard the last 2 years writing not only the last two novels, which was A Low Country Wedding, but I threw in a Christmas book, A Low Country Christmas, as well. I really was compelled to write that book, and which, by the way, it just won the Southern Fiction Award, and I'm so thrilled. It shows that you really can put your heart into a book and be excited about it. So I worked really
Absolutely.
Hard, and I never left home. I stayed in my office. For someone like me who loves to go outdoors and work with animals and be on the beach, I was indoors almost all the time. I didn't cook anymore. My husband retired, and he was giving me food and my vitamins and just kept me working. And I began to be, I was a shut-in. And so
I hear you.
Character. I realized I became the very person I often talk to when I'm speaking and on the road about get outdoors to people. Get, you know, don't stay inside.
Yeah.
Don't look at the world through glass. Feel the sun on your face and the wind
Absolutely.
In your hair. And I was becoming that person. So I created a character who felt that way but I had to give her a reason, and that was an anxiety disorder. And social anxiety is normal for a lot of people, but when you have a disorder, it's to the nth degree. You get panic attacks at the thought of going out. And actually, anxiety is way on the rise in the United States, so I think it's timely as well. So this young woman comes to the Isle of Palms, and she's renting the house, and she's commissioned to, she's a painter, so she has a passion, but she has fears of going outside, and she has to paint shorebirds for postage stamps, which I thought was really exciting, because I always wondered how they chose the art for postage stamps. And so when you read the book, you'll find out now. But now you have these two women, one 50, one just 26, and different backgrounds, different scenarios in their lives. But they come together as women always come together in times of trouble. And I love that part about the book.
Part about women friendship. It's very special, isn't it? I mean, I know my brother has his friends that he's had forever and all, but, you know, if he doesn't see them, it's okay. With women friendships, it's different.
It's critical for our survival.
It really is. We learn from our friends, don't we? And our friends
more than
can be
that.
Any age.
I think more than that,
more than
Pam,
that.
There's there are several studies, one in particular from Harvard, where they're showing that women gathering together to talk, and usually we gather together for a purpose, whether you're turtle teams or mahjong or book group. There's a million ways we gather. But when we gather together and talk, that sharing of information and personal stories and seeking solutions is, now we know, essential to our well-being and our mental health. And that's why I felt that message was so important, because if you know of someone who's isolated or alone or living alone even, draw them out, go visit them, talk to them.
Yes.
It's the kindly thing to do. And that's what Kara and Heather did with each other in this novel.
It's a wonderful book. It's fabulous. I enjoyed reading it, and
it meant
a lot to me. I think it's a profound work that is particularly important for women. But I also want to say, I hope that men will read this book and have a better understanding about the women in their lives, because fiction's not supposed to teach you anything. It's supposed to bring you enjoyment and maybe make you think about putting your feet in somebody else's shoes. But certainly, you know, in our digital age, we are more isolated. We are more inclined to stay to ourselves and communicate through technology versus one-to-one. There's something so refreshing about walking and talking with a girlfriend. It's magnificent. Tell me when you're on book tour again, because I know these books this is fairly recent. It just released at the end of June. Are you touring? Are you going to be anywhere that listeners and readers can go and see you? Yeah,
I absolutely am. Actually, tomorrow morning, I take an early flight, and I'm going to California for a week. So I've been to Florida, I've been to the Midwest, and to the North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee. And this week I'm going to all around the Los Angeles area. In fact, I'll be seeing Andy McDowell and the Hallmark people. But we're going to speaking at a lot of libraries, and my entire schedule is up on the website. I'll be in Georgia at the Decatur Book Festival on Labor Day. So that would be September 1 and 2 and 3. I'll be in the South again. But, of course, I'm coming back to Florida, though, March 6th.
And we're going to arrange some really great speaking spots for you. And we're also going to get together many times. I'm certain of it.
We need to do that.
Yeah, we absolutely do. Would you tell everyone your simple name for your website, please? And also, what other social media they can follow you on?
MaryAliceMonroe.com is my website where you can find out just about everything you want to know. I also am on Facebook, and that's Mary. I have two Facebook pages, my Mary Alice Monroe author page, where you'll find, catch up on all my goings-on and photographs and contests. But I have a conservation page as well for those who are interested in following up on the animals that I work with in my novels. And Instagram.
And what is that page called? What is the page in Facebook for
it's
conservation
Mary Alice
called?
Monroe. It's interesting. If you look for Mary Alice Monroe, you'll see two pages come up. And one is my author page and the other is conservation. And they're both marked as such.
I love it. Mary Alice Monroe, before I let you go, and can we give a secret about what happened with this podcast, this broadcast before I go? Can I tell everyone where you – can we tell everyone what happened?
If they
okay,
can hear the
so
music
you,
in
you,
the background.
Tell, well, you can't, but tell the story of us on our live show right now. Will you please?
I will, to show you how glamorous life. I'm leaving, as I said, on a plane tomorrow morning, so I'm out running errands. And there was an accident on the highway, and I was stuck. And I was really frantic because I thought I would miss, you know, my interview. So I called you and left a message to Pam, and I'm in a pub here in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. So if you hear music in the background, I'm having a very nice time.
There you go. We were supposed to speak from Mary Alice's home. And
yes.
She just wasn't going to make it. And she said, oh, gosh, it's a live show. What should I do? And I said, well, we can talk on your cell phone. And I didn't want her to sit in the car without air conditioning because it is exceptionally hot in the south.
It's hot today.
So she said, I'm ducking into the pub. And I said, go ahead. You know, whatever you need to do. It's so funny.
My new
favorite
place.
Before I let you go, I'm sorry? Your new favorite?
It's my new favorite place.
There you go. You'll have to stop back again sometime. Before you go, would you do final five with me, which is five quick questions and five quick answers?
Yes.
Okay,
all right.
Lovely. So my first question is, because you are so lovely and open and fabulous, there must be something that we don't know about you that you're willing to share.
I speak Japanese. My graduate and undergraduate studies are in Japanese, yes. Asian culture and Asian studies. So, yes, that's something most people don't know about me.
That's fabulous. is it Mandarin or is it Japanese? Because I'm not
no,
really
Japanese,
sure.
No, Japanese. Strictly
okay.
Nihongo desu. It's strictly Japanese.
Wow. That's amazing. I could almost stop right there, but I don't want to.
There's a
Whose
Japanese
book is
novel
on
coming
your night?
Someday, I'm sure.
There will be something for you, right? So,
I'm
whose
sure
book
someday.
Is on your nightstand right now?
Oh, there's actually two. One is Patty Callahan Henry's book, The Bookshop at Water's End. And the
yes,
other
I have that
Carl,
one too.
I love it. And the other is Carl Cicina's book. He have a stack of them. And I'm trying to remember the exact title. He writes about the connection we have with animals. And I met Carl a long time ago, but I re-saw him again at the Nantucket Book Festival with his new book, which I'm so sorry, I'm just blanking on the title. And it's but Carl Safina, Safina, and every book he has ever written is a beautifully written story about our connection with animals, whether it's sea turtles or animals in general. Beyond words.
Wonderful.
That's it. Beyond words.
Wonderful. Do you have a bucket list by any chance?
I do.
What's one of the things on your bucket list?
Go to Alaska. I want to tour Alaska. There's so much wildlife there. And the glaciers, but I definitely want to go to Alaska. That tops it off.
That's a really good bucket list moment. And mine is to speak to authors. You know, it's always the next one, the next one, the next one. So, see, it's a bucket list moment for me today. What do you do for fun? I know that you love working with animals, and it is part of who you are, the essence of who you are and how you write. But do you do other things for fun, Mary Alice?
Well, it's I mean, my life pretty much is focused around my work. It really is. I play with my grandson who's living with me, with my daughter. That actually is a great deal of fun for me. It's a total relaxation. If you read Beach House for Rent, you'll know that there are canaries in the book. I have five canaries of my own at home, and I'll talk to them and sing to them and just take care of them. And they're great companions. And if anyone knows anyone who's living alone, a canary is a great pet, very little work and great. You can't be sad when you hear a canary sing. And I think the last thing I do just for fun is to curl up on my porch. I have a big old swinging bed, you know, the day bed swinging on my porch, and just read a book. I don't think there's anything more, for me, decadently enjoyable than just shutting out the noise and reading a good book.
My last question to you is, have you ever considered writing outside your genre? An adult novel.
Oh,
I know that you write children's books also. Really?
No,
so tell me.
I already have. I've done children's. I'm just about to come. I'll be coming out in the near future with a middle grade series that I can't officially announce yet. But so I am going into middle grade. I've written nonfiction, and I probably will again about some of my experiences with wildlife. I think they've been very spiritual, and I have stories I want to share with people about what I've learned about life and
lovely.
What the animals have taught me. So, yes, definitely.
How lovely. Mary Alice Monroe, you are absolutely spectacular. And I'm so glad that we chatted today, even though you had to pull over and go into a pub to stay cool.
I'm sitting with my girlfriend talking.
There you go. That's as it should be. I want to do a special shout out to Robert Gregory Brown, who's not only a fine novelist, but he is also the composer, arranger, and the performer of my theme music. Thank you so much, Rob Brown. And I want to thank Down and Out Books, celebrating 6 years of award-winning crime fiction, for supporting this podcast. You can find out more at www.downandoutbooks.com. Thank you, Eric Campbell. And I want to say thank you, Mom and Dad, for always just supporting me. And thank you, Mary Alice Monroe. You're wonderful. I'll talk to you again
so
soon.
Much. I hope so.
So did
you
I.
March.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.